From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mitt Romney, the GOP nominee for president, is, in addition to a lot of other things, a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a Mormon. That's a first for anyone nominated on a major party ticket for president of the United States. It is a secular post. Americans respect that. But we want to understand the man who may take it and something of the faith that has been deeply important to him. On the convention floor last night, we talked with Republican delegates who were ready to roll with Mitt Romney's Mormonism. Here's Jeremy Lister of Boise, Idaho, on Romney's faith.
It seems like Mormons are, they're pretty good people. And so I think that as people get to know them, take away the funny underwear or whatever, they're like good people. And right there, look at the name of their church, it says the Church of Jesus Christ, so apparently they believe in Jesus Christ. Might be a little bit different than other people do, but I think everybody believes a little bit differently.
And here's Delegate Nancy Hanahan of Overland Park, Kansas. We asked if Mitt Romney's Mormonism had been an issue for her.
I want to tell you, it's better than no religion.
There you go. This hour on Point, we're looking at Mitt Romney and his faith and church with a panel of Mormons. You can join the conversation. Is Mitt Romney's Mormonism a factor for you in this race? Is it a non-factor? What's your question on this faith, this Mormon moment? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment on our website at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Our welcome goes out this hour to new On Point listeners at WNIN in Evansville, Indiana. We're glad you're here. Here's a little bit of Mitt Romney himself. This was July 25th. Mitt Romney talking with Brian Williams. Williams asked Romney if he was a hidden man, Williams' words, unable to talk about his own family history in more depth because of his Mormon heritage. Romney said no.
I'm very proud of my heritage. I'm, without question, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm proud of that. Some call that the Mormon Church. That's fine with me. I'll talk about my experiences in the church. There's no question they've helped shape my perspective.
Shaped his perspective. Should he be talking about it this week? On Monday, in an interview with Politico's Manu Raju, Republican Utah Senator Orrin Hatch said he doesn't think he really needs to during this reintroduction of Romney during the convention.
I don't think he has to do that. I think people know, if they've got Mormon neighbors, that they're honest, decent people who work hard, love the country, believe in the Constitution, believe that this country is the greatest country on earth, and who are fervent Christians. No question about that.
We want to dive in here today with the genuine open curiosity about the faith that has so informed the life of this man who may be the next president of the United States. We're in Tampa at the Republican National Convention. We've got a great panel with us of Mormons. McKay Coppins is a political reporter for BuzzFeed who's been on the campaign trail covering Mitt Romney. Also a Mormon, a graduate of Brigham Young University, spent part of his childhood in Belmont, Massachusetts, where Romney was the local Mormon bishop, leader of the faith. McKay Coppins, it's great to have you right here in Tampa.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Joanna Brooks, professor at the University of California, San Diego, author of The Book of Mormon Girl, Stories from an American Faith, another Brigham Young graduate. She did her Mormon mission work in Tokyo, Japan. Japan Brooks, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. But just a correction, I never served a mission. Thank you for having me, though.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. Somehow I got that wrong here. My
okay.
Mistake, duly noted.
Not in Tokyo. It's a lovely place, but I've
okay,
never
yes,
served
yes,
there.
It is. It was my home for 5 years. It's a great place. And with us from Salt Lake City, Utah's Jeff Benedict. He writes for Sports Illustrated, author of The Mormon Way of Doing Business, How 8 Western Boys Reached the Top of Corporate America, also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a Mormon. Jeff Benedict, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you all, and I appreciate your willingness to sit down with us and just help Americans get kind of oriented here as Mitt Romney takes such a prominent position in this country's life. He will this week, the roll call yesterday and his speech on Thursday, he's the guy right out front in the Republican Party, maybe the next president of the United States. And McKay, let me come first to you because you've been on the trail covering Governor Romney as he's been going around the country. How about the way he handles his Mormonism as he campaigns? Ann Romney was saying last night, look, there are some things he doesn't really want to talk about. And she went into her list of good deeds that he's done and so on. What about Mormonism and his campaign style?
Yeah, Mormonism has been this whole year really a topic that he's avoided almost compulsively.
Say religiously.
Yeah, almost religiously. As a reporter who covers the kind of the intersection of his faith, my faith, and his campaign. I know probably better than anyone how much the campaign has tried to avoid that issue. Every time I ask a question about it, the answer comes back, well, why don't you just ask the church? Or more often, they just reply with silence.
Why the avoidance? Because he does not think it's relevant? I mean, it was a big part of his upbringing, a big part of it. It has been a big part of his life. Or because Mormonism's history in this country, it's been difficult sometimes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to evoke that.
I have a story up at BuzzFeed that tries to get at this. And I think that in 2008, when he first ran, he did try to talk about his faith more. Mm-hmm. He thought that it was his role to explain it a little bit to the evangelical Christian voters he was trying to win over. That ended up not working, obviously. He lost Iowa after spending millions of dollars there and didn't win the evangelical vote. And I think in 2012... two things happened. His campaign decided that it really wasn't worth it to engage this issue. They weren't going to win over a certain segment of the GOP base, and they just had to live with that fact. And Romney's own family had kind of spent a brutal campaign in 2008 dealing with kind of the anti-Mormon confrontations that come in retail politics in Iowa, and kind of said, you know, we don't want to talk about that this time. We're starting to see that change here at the convention just in the last couple weeks, mm-hmm. but up until recently, he's completely avoided the subject.
Jeff Benedict, look at that dynamic for a minute. You know, is Mormonism a no-win issue for a presidential candidate, or is this something unique to the way that Mitt Romney carries his faith?
It's really delicate. It's like a tightrope, Tom. And I think, you know, for really obvious, cautious reasons, he stayed away from it, as McKay said. But I think there comes a point, and I think that time is now, when, you know, the lines have been drawn and he is the guy. And people do want to know a little bit more about how a faith that's been so prominent and so deep in his life has made him who he is. And I think that it will help him at this point not to become someone talking about Mormonism all over the place, but if he can get the anecdotes out there that illustrate how this faith has helped make him who he is, I think it's a win-win for him, and I think people will they'll like him, they'll like the stories, and they'll understand better why Mitt is who he is.
So, Joanna, sit with us for a minute on just that point. I mean, we're here sort of respectfully with honest curiosity, mm-hmm. inquiring. I mean, religions bring beauty to life. Religions have issues, all of them. We all know
Absolutely.
That. For Americans sitting looking at this candidate and the possibility of him being the next president, of the United States, I don't know, what would you advise them to be thinking about when it comes to his faith and what it might mean about a presidency in the hands of a Mormon leader?
Well, I think Jeff and McKay are right in that this is a really pivotal moment for the Romney campaign, but also for Mormons in America. It's important to recognize that, you know, most representations of Mormons in popular culture, in the media, Mormons ourselves haven't necessarily had a hand in shaping. If you go to the bookstore, a lot of books about Mormons are still written by non-Mormons. So access to real-life stories about what it actually feels like to grow up in the Mormon faith is still fairly limited. It's one of the reasons I wrote the Book of Mormon Girl, to say, here is the beautiful, funny, human, tender side of our faith. And we see Romney now trying to convey that. That's hard work for a presidential candidate to do if the groundwork hasn't been laid already in culture. So he's trying to introduce a nation to a religion that many people are still unfamiliar with when the groundwork hasn't been laid. So he's carrying a heavy burden. It's going to take more Mormons telling their stories in order for people to get to know us.
Yeah, so help us. You're kind of an expert in thinking about this and talking about this. I mean, what do we need to know about Mormonism as we contemplate having a Mormon president? Something? Nothing? What's useful?
It's important to know that Mormonism is a deeply embedded part of the American story, that our faith was born in upstate New York in the early 19th century out of deeply American hopes, you know, to create newness, to create more vigor and vitality in average common people's relationship to God, that it's a faith deeply rooted in Protestantism, and that over the way our experience has been one of separating ourselves from the mainstream, physically even in the middle of the 19th century. We're moving to Utah and establishing, in response to some fairly fierce persecution in the Midwest, our own civilization, as it were. But that during the 20th century, you know, as we've reassimilated, Mormons have shown themselves so eager to blend into the American mainstream, to be the most patriotic, the most conservative, the most family-oriented. And what the main mental divide I find people face when they think about Mormonism are these 19th century images of Mormons as being polygamous, renegade, secretive, violent, and that Osmond Romney perfection we see in contemporary
American
pop culture.
Marie Osmond, the Osmond brothers and all that.
Exactly. I wrote about Marie Osmond being one of my childhood idols in the Book of Mormon. But that split, and Americans look at Romney and say, well, which one is it? Is he the guy that believes the strange stuff that might have the plural wife, or is he this incredibly, you know, like, staid bureaucratic personality I see standing before me? And reconciling that split in the American imagination is hard for many voters. And the truth is that Mormons, like you said, Tom, are human beings living a demanding faith with contradiction and complexity.
His great-granddad, McKay, was one of those renegades, quote-unquote,
right.
as Joanna has it, heading away from persecution in the Midwest, further west. So when you look at Mitt Romney later this week, when you see him on the stump, do you see a man who's speaking through a prism of Mormon faith? Do you hear Mormonism in his worldview, McKay? You've covered it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that whenever I see him on the stump, I think any Mormon that watches him on the stump or watches speeches that he gives sees different tells that he's a Mormon, that he's one of them. And I think that that's something we will continue to see, and especially on Thursday as he talks about his experience.
Jeff, are Mormons excited right now? I mean, for heaven's sake, you've got a Mormon who's, you know, one vote away maybe from the presidency.
I've never seen this much enthusiasm in the Mormon community, and I travel all over the country and see Mormons in lots of different places, and there's a fervor among them. It's an enthusiasm. There's a pride that one of them has reached this point, and I think
Jeff,
there's
hold
no
the thought
question.
Right there. We've got a break. We'll come right back to it. Jeff, McKay, Joanna, we're talking about faith and politics, Mitt Romney and Mormonism. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Elder Young. Hello, did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA? You can read all about it now.
Hello,
in this nifty book, it's free, no, you don't have to pay.
Hello,
hello.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about faith and politics, Mitt Romney's faith, as the country prepares to perhaps elect its first Mormon president. Behind us, a little music from the Broadway smash, The Book of Mormon. Mormon's story has often been told by others. This might not be the way that every Mormon would tell their story, but it has been awfully popular on Broadway. It's the way a lot of people have learned. We were talking with Republican delegates here in Tampa just yesterday about how they felt about it. Here's Ron Hewitt from Llano County, Texas.
We all have the ability to be any religion we want in the United States of America, and it should never become a political issue. It wasn't with Obama. It should not be with Romney. We all have the right. It's a personal thing. It's not a public thing.
It's a personal thing. It's not a public thing. And yet anybody who follows a faith with some seriousness is affected in their person. And this person could be the next president of the United States. One person who hopes so spoke to the Republicans at the convention last night. Ann Romney talked with a very appreciative crowd about her husband with some allusions to the kind of work he's done within his life in the Mormon Church.
I know this good and decent man for what he is. He's warm and loving and patient. He has tried to live his life with a set of values centered on family, faith, and love of one's fellow man. From the time we were first married, I've seen him spend countless hours helping others. I've seen him drop everything to help a friend in trouble, and been there when late-night calls of panic come from a member of our church whose child has been taken to the hospital.
And on her list went. Now, those acts of kindness, acts of intervention to help folks out, many of those, I'm assuming, came from the time that he was a leader in the town you grew up in, McKay, Belmont, Massachusetts. What was his position there? He had a couple. I mean, a bishop and then president of the stake. What do those things mean? What were his responsibilities?
Right. So he was a bishop, which is essentially a minister of a congregation of a few hundred people. Mormonism is unique in that the leaders of the church are completely volunteer, unpaid people. So he had his career at Bain Capital at the same time he was serving as a bishop in this ward. I was very young, so I don't really remember him. My parents do. But he...
A minister, when the call comes in the night, you respond to it from a member of your congregation.
And anyone who served as a bishop knows that you spend, you know, countless hours. It really is like a second job. That, you know, 20, 30 hours a week responding to people in your ward who are in crisis, who need marriage counseling, who need food or other temporal needs. And it's something that he really doesn't talk about very much. There was a line last night that Ann Romney said, Mitt doesn't like talking about the times that he helps other people because he sees it as a privilege, not a talking point. Mm-hmm. It was something like that. And I think that was kind of key to the story that Ann Romney wants to tell about her husband, and also one of the reasons we haven't heard very much about his faith. He just doesn't want to talk about those things. It's kind of innately Mormon that we don't talk about serving other people.
And then he was president of the stake, which is a bigger role.
Right. It's sort of like an archbishop in Catholic terms. He oversaw several congregations in the greater Boston area. More of an administrator role, but still was, counseling with people in need. And people who rise to that level in the church, they're not, it's not like they're Cardinal Dolan in the Catholic Church or anything, but it is a role where it's clear that he was a leader in the church, that he was very faithful, and it does shape who you are. It's a big experience.
Joanna Brooks, it's not the Mormonism, a very communitarian faith and community, members helping one another, but it's not always just help. I mean, there's discipline and rules, too, and he would have had that responsibility as a bishop and a stake president, Joanna.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, growing up Mormon, as I recount in the Book of Mormon Girl, I was taught always to be aware of the rules of my religion, which, many people know. Mormons don't drink, Mormons don't smoke, Mormons don't drink coffee, Mormons promise to live lives of faithful church attendance and service and chastity and devotion, fidelity, all these good things. And I was always aware as a child, even, going into a room, that I was an example of my faith. That was my responsibility. We see that multiplied in Mitt Romney, a thousandfold as he's on this national stage. And, as McKay discussed, I thought it was important that Ann Romney explained last night, Tag Romney, Mitt Romney's son, did as well yesterday, that it's a Mormon custom not to talk too openly about acts of service rendered to one another. It's so important the campaign is explaining that that's where some of his reticence is coming from. Otherwise, Romney's shyness makes it look like he's ashamed.
Talk about the, I don't know if it's what the right word is here, but enforcement of church rules or the, I don't know, discipline. I'm not sure what the right word is, but Mitt Romney had to do that as well. I mean, I've read here, I don't know, but that he had to put people out of the church in some circumstances, that he got involved in, I don't know what the right word is, disciplining people when there were extramarital affairs. I mean, there are issues of like that, and I wonder how that sort of rules matrix comes into the Romney worldview, Joanna.
That's an important question. There's been a stream of stories throughout the Romney campaign from church members in the Boston area, women mostly, who have talked about their one-on-one experiences with Romney counseling them. These have been widely reported, so there's no news here. But, part of the responsibility of a Mormon bishop is to administer church discipline. And that does include counseling people who are not keeping the rules. And some of the reporting has suggested that Romney, in-person counseling sometimes with some individuals took a fairly authoritative stance. It's in line, I think, in general with a sort of bureaucratic personality Mitt Romney has. I mean, he is a man, clearly that's capable of acts of kindness. That's what Ann Romney spoke to last night. It's what more speakers at the convention Thursday are expected to address. But, bishops, like all clerical leaders, are also expected to uphold the rules of a tradition, and he's done that. He's identified thoroughly with the institution and implemented its rules.
Joanna, McKay, Jeff, I want to begin to bring our listeners in here. Emma is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Emma, you're on the air out of Tampa. Hi.
Hi, Tom. I had a question about the living prophets, that Mormons believe in living prophets, the head of the church, and that good, committed, devout Mormons must abide by what they say, if that's the annual address or a daily one-on-one session, whoever the head of the church may be. So my concern is, the public elects the president, and if Mitt Romney is elected by the president, the public, are we also electing, I just see there may be a conflict of interest there, that Mitt Romney will have to listen to the living prophets, and, the public is not electing the president to have that kind of that power coming from an outside source.
Emma, we've got it. And Jeff, let me bring that one to you. I mean, Americans have been around this track before with JFK, who famously spoke, and, you know, there were issues, concerns. People said, well, who's in charge here? Is it the John F. Kennedy, or is it the Pope if he's president of the United States? You know, who's he ultimately listen to? What is the living prophet tradition within Mormonism, Jeff, and how do you expect that might apply here?
It's a fair question, Tom, that I'd have, too, if I wasn't a Mormon. And I think in this case, Mitt's been clear about this, actually. He's addressed this before. And I think in matters of state, you can rest assured that Mitt is not going to be turning to the church for guidance. He has a record that shows that in Massachusetts. He's not afraid to say things and do things that may appear to sometimes brush up against the official word of the church. He's a deep man of faith, and personally, he's going to practice his religion, but he would never impose any aspects of that on the American public. He's a guy who recognizes that we're a nation of many faiths. And I'd add to that, Tom, that he was actually my stake president for years. I was a law student and a graduate student in Boston when Mitt was my stake president. And I saw him personally in many instances where he had to deal with some of the issues that you were asking Joanna about. And although there have been some reports about him seeming to be hard or harsh, my experience is that, you know, most of the time this guy was unusually compassionate, but he still, in that capacity, he represented the church. And when you are in that position, and I've been in similar positions, and McKay probably has too, you have to do what is the church position when you're in that capacity.
Joanna, talk to us here. There is the tradition, expectation of obedience within the Mormon church. What about that tradition, to Emma's question here? You heard Jeff speak to it. What do you think?
I think, I mean, we hear Emma's question quite a bit, and so clearly it's one that continues to need to be addressed. I think the best way to get a sense for, you know, what influence a living prophet would have in the life of Mitt Romney is actually dial into what the leaders of the Mormon Church say and how they conduct themselves right now. And you can see, you know, there's twice a year a general conference that's broadcast by the church to all members around the world when the leaders of the church speak to the members. And if there's something that's going to be said by the LDS prophet, he says it then. And you can see the full thing online at LDS.org. And, you know, really the counsel that comes from Mormon leaders these days is like, the most exciting thing is like, pay off your debt. You know, it's like, love your families, go to church. There's very little dramatic that comes from Mormon leaders in a way that if anything that should cause voters to be at alarm. And I say that as someone
And yet, Joanna, we've seen the LDS church be very political. I mean, came out very strong against the Equal Rights Amendment decades ago now. Very strong, of course, in the gay marriage, more than dust up in California. It's not as though it's never had direct and pretty potent intersection with politics.
Oh, that you're absolutely correct. And, you know, as a Mormon living in California, and I write about it in the Book of Mormon Girl, you know, the experience of living through the Proposition 8 campaign. And I was, you know, I was a Mormon, in fact, who sort of took a conscientious objector stance and said, I understand that this issue is important to my church, but I support marriage equality. No, you're right. There are these landmark instances in the political history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the last 30 years. That having been said, there are Mormons who do differ on political issues. There are Harry Reid Mormons.
But what if one of those
John
should come up?
Mormons.
Yes, absolutely. But no, what if one of those should come up in the next, you know, 4 years, and if it was President Romney, what would that mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think the church's heavy-handed involvement in Proposition 8 and in the Equal Rights Amendment 30 years before has raised these kinds of questions for American voters. It certainly raises questions of obedience and loyalty for those who belong to the church. I mean, it's clear that Mitt Romney is, you know, wants to fall into line on church positions on issues like marriage equality, on abortion rights, on issues impacting gender. So, you know, he is going to represent these longstanding conservative positions the church has taken. That's not a matter, though, necessarily of a prophet directing him to decide this way or that way as president. It's a matter of the values as a Mormon born and raised in a gender conservative tradition, you know, of bringing those values to the presidency.
McKay, Tom, you followed him just, on... Oh, Jeff, sorry. Yes, please, Jeff.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, Mormons don't bet, as you know, but if I were a betting man... Yeah. I would bet everything that the Mormon Church will be more standoffish than ever if Mitt Romney becomes the president.
Exactly.
They've already staked out that ground in public pronouncements to the membership of the church on political issues this year. And if he's in the White House, you can bet that you're not going to see anything coming out of Salt Lake City that would remotely even look like it's intended to influence the direction of the country or Mitt Romney's decisions. And at the same time, I'm sure that he's going to be the same way in his approach. I mean, no one's more aware of the sensitivity of this than Mitt Romney.
McKay, you've covered him. I mean, that would be a comforting kind of assurance, but then, you know, these are big stakes.
Sure.
Has he spoken about this on the campaign trail? What would you expect around this issue from a Romney presidency?
He gave a big speech in 2007 addressing his faith, and he made a point to say that my allegiance as a president would be to the Constitution and to the people who elected me, not to my church. He went out of his way to say that. So that's one point. Also, to the point Jeff just made, it was actually kind of amusing. Yesterday, within minutes of Mitt Romney officially winning the nomination on the convention floor here, the Mormon Church posted a video on its Facebook page with the headline, "Mormons are politically diverse." And it was clear that they wanted to make that point right away, that not all Mormons support Mitt Romney. The church is not going to meddle in a Mitt Romney presidency or in this presidential campaign. The church hasn't taken a stance on this. And that was a point that they wanted to make clearly.
Paul's calling from Wayland, Massachusetts. I'll be right to you, Joanna. Paul in Wayland, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom, and thank
hi.
You. Mitt Romney has been supporting the Republican platform that the federal government should have substantially smaller size.
Yes.
Given the Mormon Church's tradition of food pantries and church-sponsored aid to the poor, would a Romney presidency promote a smaller social safety net where churches take a more active role in aiding the poor?
Joanna, what do you expect? I mean, this seems to be in line with the whole convention sentiment this year. Is that Mormonism speaking when it comes to Mitt Romney's perspective?
Well, there's certainly a coherence, but it's really part of, you know, the larger Republican Party emphasis on shrinking government. That's a Grover Norquist, you know, impulse, mm-hmm. not just a Mormon impulse. You know, Mormonism actually has an interesting political history. And during the Great Depression, at a time when the church was developing its own welfare infrastructure, which is really an amazing infrastructure, you know, Mormon people were counseled to vote against FDR in the New Deal, and they did so overwhelmingly in the state of Utah for several elections in a row. You know, it's in the late 20th century that we've seen the ascendance of a small government conservatism among LDS people. That's definitely a part of Mormon political culture, but really it's a part of Republican culture. And Romney's campaign has been, in many respects, an effort to bring his positions into alignment with the ever more conservative Republican Party base.
Does the old Mormon communitarian ethic really work in contemporary America with its size? I mean, this is not an outpost in Utah. I mean, you've been traveling with him. You see the country, McKay.
Yeah.
Does that impulse apply to a country of 300-plus million as diverse as this country is with the scale of challenges?
Well, I mean, that's the fundamental ideological argument that Republicans and Democrats have been having for, you know, decades, right? But within Mormonism, it is pretty remarkable how well this works. I mean, the Mormon Church really runs one of the largest private welfare programs in the country. And I live in Brooklyn, New York, mm-hmm. and attend a small congregation there of 80 or 100 people. A lot of them are, you know, below the poverty line. A lot of them, a lot of single mothers with mm-hmm. Children they have to take care of. And they get assistance from the state, of course. But the church is really their first go-to place for assistance when it comes to food from what is called the Bishop's Storehouse, these pantries of food, for assistance with rent when they need it, and employment also. I mean, this program really works in the church, and Republicans would probably like to use it as a model for other communities.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live this week from the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida. We are talking this hour about faith and politics, Mitt Romney's faith, as the country prepares to perhaps elect its first Mormon president. McKay Coppins is here with us. He's a political reporter for BuzzFeed. He's been following Mitt Romney on the campaign trail. He's a Mormon. Joanna Brooks is with us, author of The Book of Mormon Girl, Stories from an American Faith, joins us from San Diego, California, a Mormon with a big eye on women's issues within that faith. Jeff Benedict is here, writes for Sports Illustrated and more, author of The Mormon Way of Doing Business. Sarah is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to say, you know, I'm Jewish, my husband is Christian, and the thing we have in common is respect and that we have faith in God. And I know, you know, I don't care what your religion is or how you do it, as long as you're a good person and you believe in God. You know, I have known a few Mormon people throughout my life, and I will say the one Mormon girl who was my assistant was the only employee I could trust with my checkbook. Okay, so I know that they have good values, and they don't fight with anybody. They don't fight with anybody.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah,
they fight with each other. It's okay.
Yeah, with each other. And there was a time. Sarah, I've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate that call very much from Omaha. Let me get one more, if I may, from Nashville, Tennessee. Sarah, thanks. John in Nashville, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to say, when I see Mitt Romney as a candidate, I don't really see him as a big fundamentalist for his beliefs any more than I see Barack Obama as a big fundamentalist for his beliefs. And for the Mormon Church, I'm curious. I heard an interesting statement by the lady that you have on the air with you, being a conscientious objector. And if that's the case, for me, it's tough to connect with Mitt Romney because of his business practices. And an example could be simply of a mission from the Mormon Church being over in a third world country, helping people who are at the same time working for a manufacturing company. They're building products for Mitt Romney's ventures. So it's a disconnect for me, and kind of looking at it from that point of view and saying, you know, he can't really run on being a fundamentalist for his religion because it doesn't really match up, and a lot of politicians mix that up with religion, and they think because they practice within their church, it justifies their policies they make.
And John, let us pick it up right there because it's interesting. There is a long and deep connection between commerce and a lot of Mormon culture, at the very least. I mean, Jeff, you've written about this, but everybody looks at Mormonism, sees, you know, here is a belief system where, I mean, the symbol of the whole thing is the beehive, right? I mean, the busy bees, industriousness. Right. It comes up right up to commerce really, really quickly. What about that connection, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's a great question, Tom, and I think that there is a long heritage of self-sufficiency and industriousness in the Mormon faith. It's embedded in the culture and in the Mormon way of doing business. I looked at 9 of the most successful Mormon businessmen ever, Mitt being one of them, and one of the common links between just about every one of these CEOs is that they all served a mission at age 19, Mitt among them. And, you know, to me, the most important thing that you learn on a mission, I went on a mission too, is not drive or anything else. It's that you learn not to take offense. And I think one of the things that you really see in Mitt is this is a guy that has gone through a pretty grueling 5 years of his own doing. And in it, there have been some shots fired, and there's been all kinds of stuff about his religion and everything else, his work at Bain. But this is a guy that kind of keeps going and never seems to really get too caught up in the crossfire. And I attribute a lot of that to what you learn on a mission, which is you spend 2 years trying to sell something to people that most people don't really want to hear about. And you get knocked down a lot, and you get criticized, you get beat up. And yet you get up the next day and you do it again, and you learn in the course of that that you really need to be accepting of other people and that you can't take offense when people may say things about you or your religion that you don't necessarily like.
I want to ask on this commerce point, but first on the mission. When you're on mission as a young Mormon, as you were, as Mitt Romney was, as many Mormons are, how do you do it? How do you, as you put it, sell Mormonism? What do you say to people to convert them? What's the basic message?
Well, I went to Seattle in the mid-'80s, and right out of high school, and, you know,
not exactly
I was in a big
Timbuktu.
No, I was in a big city, and I'd never done this before, obviously. And I remember being downtown Seattle at lunchtime when all the businessmen are pouring out of the skyscrapers down there. And I was set up on a busy street corner with an easel and a sign, and just started talking to people. And I'd never done anything like it in my life. And I actually found it liberating and exciting. And, of course, most people looked at you like, what are you, crazy?
But what's the message? What's the hook, Jeff? What do you say?
It depends where you are. If you're knocking on someone's door, we were normally introducing the Book of Mormon and telling people who we are and that we had a message about Jesus Christ. And we would try to give out the Book of Mormon to people who answered the door. And that's a tough sell. Obviously, we were in a heavily born-again Christian area, but that's what the church advised us to do, and that's what we did. But the best success you have, of course, is when a fellow Mormon introduces you to a friend who wants to learn about the church. Otherwise, most of the time, you're wearing out your knuckles, and you're learning what it's like to get rejected. That's what you do.
Adam Gopnik. Yes, please, Joanna, please.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, to add to Jeff, you know, as I talk about in the Book of Mormon, growing up as a young Mormon girl and feeling like the mm-hmm. most important story, and the questions you hear Mormons talk about, where are you from? Where are you going? Why are you here? What's the purpose of this life? And Mormons have this view that life is meaningful and purposeful, that we live before this life. There was a plan in coming to Earth. There's a plan for, you know, learning what we need to and getting out of here and going home again. You know, and so that sense of being all enclosed in this plan that has good answers for things is one of the main things Mormons feel most proud about and try and communicate about the faith.
Talk to us about women. You've written and thought about it a lot. Americans are looking at this candidate now. Mormonism has a history on race and women. Women first. I mean, as an American woman listening today who maybe isn't a Mormon, you've expressed concerns about the role of women as it's been steered within the Mormon church. What do you say?
Well, and last night was such an important night at the convention. Ann Romney took center stage. She was mm-hmm. forceful. She was dynamic. She was authoritative. She was commanding. And, you know, it was a historic moment for Mormon women. We don't usually get to see ourselves on national television as something other than plural wives. You know, I mean, the last mm-hmm. Mormon woman to have that kind of a national stage was probably Marie Osmond, and that was the 70s,
sure.
you know.
Right.
So, you know, at the same time, you know, Ann Romney's presentation last night, you know, sort of voiced a very traditional political wives statement that, you know, and we heard it from Michelle Obama 4 years ago. So it's this notion, oh, women are great. Women are so important. Women really are incredible. And yet all we need is my husband or one good man to set the country right. So, you know, it's true. Mormonism has been a very gender conservative tradition. As you've noted, Tom, it was on record in opposition to the ERA. The church itself remains what appears to outsiders very conservative in the way it divides up responsibilities within the church. At the same time, Mormon women take pride in this strong heritage of pioneer foremothers. There are elements of our theology that are incredibly gender progressive. So there's a lot to feel good about as well. So it's a mixed bag. It's a complicated faith. It can't be written off as all demeaning to women because clearly it produces strong women as well and always has. Utah women were the first to vote in this country, little known fact. So, you know, it's a complicated story in Mormonism on gender
up.
And on everything else.
McKay, Adam Gopnik writes in the New Yorker, he says that talks about this link, this complementarity between commerce and the Mormon belief system. And he says, Gopnik, that Mitt Romney believes in the American gospel of wealth that lies behind all that, the idea that rich people got rich by being good, that the riches are a sign of their virtue, and that they should therefore be allowed to rule. Does that line up with what you see Mitt communicating on the stump?
Sort of. I mean, it's certainly a Republican ideal that we've heard a lot at this convention, this idea of upward mobility, that wealth equals success and competence and you know, the right to be in power. I don't know, though. I read that same thing by Adam Gopnik. I don't know if that's necessarily an inherently Mormon idea. I mean, the prosperity gospel is basically what he's describing there.
It's beyond Mormonism.
It's well beyond Mormonism. Mm-hmm. And certainly that exists within Mormonism. I know in wealthy Utah suburbs, you have a lot of families competing to have the best car, the best house, because it's a symbol of righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also that there is this idea within Mormonism that this very communitarian streak where we take care of each other, where we look out for the poor and needy, that's been an emphasis the church has been pushing recently. And I don't know if it's more innately tuned to the prosperity gospel than evangelical Christianity or other religious sects.
Last point, Joanna, on Mormonism and race. There was a long time when African Americans were not permitted to have significant roles in the church. The church is past that now. But is it really, Joanna?
You know, in the Book of Mormon Girl, I talk about growing up as a young girl and learning these old racist folk doctrines about why black people. Because I was 7 years old when I'm 40 now. I was 7 years old when black men were ordained to the priesthood. And the fact is that racism remains a part of Mormon history. It's part of our legacy that, like any other American people, we are sorting out. And belonging to a faith means owning its hard parts as well as its beautiful and good parts. So, yeah, Mormons still have work to do in righting our relationships with our African-American neighbors. There's a long history of misunderstanding that still needs to be addressed.
And let me ask you finally about this one, the White Horse Prophecy. This is an old Mormon prophecy attributed to Joseph Smith, predicts that after banks fail and the Constitution is nearing collapse, as I understand it, Mormons flush with wealth, the white horse in this metaphor will rise and lead America back to greatness. Is that somewhere in folk, in literature or folk telling? Or where does that come from, Joanna? What is that?
That is a folk doctrine that comes down from sort of apocryphal sources from the 19th century, not written down by Joseph Smith himself, but I heard Joseph Smith said that kind of sources. It's never been accepted as doctrinal by the leaders of the church, but it sure has animated some interesting Mormon political subcultures, especially the far-right Mormons who do like to fantasize. But, you know, those folks actually aren't really rooting for Mitt Romney this election season. They're voting for Paul, so...
They were anyway. Jeff, last to you, does it feel like fulfillment of a destiny here, or is that getting, should we just keep it more secular than that?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that to me at all. What it feels like to me is that Mormonism is the new kid in town. Catholicism and Protestant faiths have been here a lot longer, and whenever a new kid shows up, there's an initiation process, there's an acceptance process, you get beat up a little bit. Right. I think that they're now making their way into the neighborhood, and everyone's finding out, you know, they're pretty good neighbors. They're just like us.
Jeff Benedict, author of The Mormon Way of Doing Business, joining us today from Salt Lake City. Jeff, thank you so much for your time and insights.
Thank you.
Joanna Brooks, author of The Book of Mormon Girl in San Diego. Joanna, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And McKay Coppins with us here in Tampa, political reporter for BuzzFeed. Great to have you, McKay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, let's get a whole different view of what's going on here. With me right now in the Convention Center in Tampa, Florida, Scott Stantis and Rob Rogers. Scott is editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Rob, cartoonist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They've been casting their jaundiced and funny eye on everything going on around the world and country and this convention. Scott Stantis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Rob, wonderful to have you sit down with us.
Thanks,
here.
Tom.
All right, give us some visuals. I've been looking at some of your cartoons, but what are you drawing out of this convention as you watch everything going on? I mean, Rob, you're tough. You've got a Republican elephant pole dancing.
That's
here.
That's right, yeah.
In the Tampa strip club, it looks like, saying the dollars in the belt. Maybe we've become too obsessed with fundraising.
Yeah.
Scott, you've got some of your own tough stuff here. A big, fat... Super PAC claw coming down on We the People. Looks like the Constitution. Is that yours?
That's mine.
Okay.
You sound surprised. Yes.
No, I'm not. But visually, what do you see coming out of Florida, Tampa?
So far, it's a typical traditional convention stuff. Funny hats, delegates acting goofy. Last night was the first kind of substantive night. I thought it was great that, you know, Christie didn't even mention Romney, or didn't seem
for 16 minutes.
And yeah. Romney talked about love. He said, "No respect."
Yeah, that's
we were talking about this before we went on.
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying that. I was like, he went in and debunked, you know, Mrs. Romney's speech.
Love gets you nothing. Yeah. That's what it gets you.
It's
respect.
All about love. No, it isn't.
Right. How New Jersey a message was that?
So, were you drawing that last night already? Do you draw constantly as you're
pretty much constantly. In fact, we were just drawing right now. We drew you.
Oh boy. Woohoo!
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of walk around and absorb stuff, and then we sit and draw. You know, it is kind of constantly. I mean, because even if we don't do something that's a full-blown cartoon, we can do little sketches and little other things and put it on the blog.
Do you go out of the visuals, or do you go out of themes that you're feeling in the air and you turn them into visuals?
Both.
I'd say, but you mentioned Rob's cartoons being harder here. Rob is of the left, I'm of the right, politically.
Yeah.
So Rob comes to these things, the Republican conventions, and gets angry and sees stuff that really upsets him. I'm here going, okay, you know, that works for me.
Right.
Yeah. But next week, it's going to be the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to be energized
So Rob's got they're putting up plywood here as Hurricane Isaac is headed up a storm, whatever. And one this kind of graffiti on one is "Go away, Isaac," and on the other is GOP 2012, go away, women.
Right.
Ooh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because they came into this this convention, you know, hoping that they would have a bounce from Ryan, and all they've been doing is talking about abortion and, you know, women's reproductive freedom, and trying to defend their stance on that. So it was kind of interesting that while they want to be talking about the economy, they're talking about women's rights.
And you, Scott, have got a great big Uncle Sam with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan in the palm of his hand, mm-hmm. saying, okay, convince me. How do you think they're doing on that?
It's hard to say. First off, they canceled Monday, of course. Tuesday night, the country got to meet Ann Romney for really most of them for the first time.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing. I've never been to a convention where the candidate has to define himself or herself for the first time at the convention. I think his speech Thursday, you can't overstate how important that's going to be for him. Because, honestly, besides folks like us who, you know,
pay attention all the time.
Exactly.
Right.
Most of Americans don't. And now they're going to sit down and they're going to meet Mitt Romney.
All right, so you've got a caption contest
in
one of yours. And it's Mitt Romney's driving a bus, Paul Ryan sitting next to him in the front seat. They both look kind of, scattered in that cartoon way. It says Romney Ryan on the front of the bus. Tampa is the destination up in the signboard place there. And in reference to the old story about Mitt and his dog on the top of the family station wagon, you've got something strapped in a dog cage here on top of the bus. And it's a little unclear what those eyes are staring out from the dark of the interior.
It seems to be human. You can make it.
It kind of seems to be human. What are you inviting people to speculate? Who is that strapped on top of the Romney Ryan bus?
Well, it can be women, I suppose, if Rob was entering.
I think that's Romney's tax accountant.
Maybe it's happy Republicans on the way to the White House. They look a little unnerved there. Though.
They do look unnerved. And that's why I invite people to go to chicagotribune.com/Stannis. Try your hand at the caption. Tell me what you think.
Hey, it's great to have you both. You can put your own caption on that cartoon right there. Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Great to have you with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
And Rob Rogers, cartoonist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Love that town. Great to have you here. Thanks so much for coming
Thanks,
by.
Thanks, Tom. It was great.
Keep drawing, guys. It's wonderful to have you. We are in Tampa, Florida, all this week at the Republican National Convention. Join us morning, noon, and night. We're happy to hear from you online at onpointradio.com. Great to have you with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook from Tampa. This is On Point.